You know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, hey. I'm bringing booty back.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
You sound kind of far away.
Do I?
Yeah, is your microphone up on your forehead?
Oh, is it better now?
Yeah, it's better now.
It was by my forehead.
This isn't DC Noise. You can't do that stuff on the show. This is a professional.
You could hear me okay now?
Yeah, you sound fine. Why?
Oh, okay. Well, it wasn't that far off. It was a little bit near my temple, but you should have been able to hear me.
I could hear you. It just sounded like you were across the room a little bit.
Ah.
And welcome to Geek Brunch.
Yes, welcome.
Episode. something.
Episode 216.
216.
Yes. I wonder how Mike is doing.
I don't know. I occasionally see him
in pictures.
In pictures that other people post, or he retweets something on Twitter.
1,000 times. Yeah.
Like he'll go on a barrage of retweets.
Yes.
But nothing about him.
Yeah. I bet he misses this show, though.
He probably cries himself to sleep every night.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure about it.
Boring old Japan.
Yeah.
Going to.
So that could be on Geek Brunch right now. Damn it.
And I'm stuck here at Tokyo Disneyland.
Yeah.
Stuck here at the Tezuko Museum.
I thought we'd go to listener emails first. What do you think?
I'm stuck here surrounded by like 10 hot chicks. Is that the case? So every picture is in it. It's like him and all these women.
All kinds of women. Yeah, there's one guy in the whole picture.
Like, boy, he's having a rough time over there. Terrible.
Yeah, it's lost in translation.
So listener email.
Yes. Mr. Vandalay. Wanted to ask you a question about how you've achieved such good parental advice. Like, he uses your tapes.
Okay.
And they're working so well. Like, you've turned around his kids.
Also, he's wondering what the secret is.
They used to be really deviant until they've purchased your tapes. He says he loves the one tape where you talk about, like, here's 3 seconds. You could have 4.5 goldfish, you know? Like, it's all in these random fractions of numbers. And he's like, how did you even come up with this shit? Are you there?
Oh, sorry. I muted myself. I got too excited.
No, you had a parental thing you had to do.
No, I said four. Okay. Mm. Now, I was saying, I think he's referring to disc 7 of my 12-disc set from my first series of Bill's parental tapes. Wherein, yeah, disc 7 is numbers. Numbers and how to use them against your children. In parentheses, against your children. What was the question? How did I obtain such knowledge?
Like, how did you even come up with these ideas in the first place?
Oh, man, I've traveled the country talking to children.
Deviants.
In schoolyards, in playgrounds. I go around with my basically an ice cream truck, but anyway.
and you learn the behaviors, the deviant behaviors of children, and then you apply them to your tapes, right?
I learn things.
It's so, this numbering scheme though is really weird, and he said he would have never thought of that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your support. My next series should be coming out sometime next year, 2015. So be looking out for that.
Yeah, he's just really impressed. He turned his kids around.
I guess I can announce now. There's a new parenting app I'm going to be releasing.
Oh, so you're moving from the cassette tapes
to that,
technology. That's awesome.
To apps, yes, apps.
Speaking of ice cream trucks, this was a stupid episode. I'm just going to bring this up. But I was watching Comic Book Man. You probably left that.
Yeah, I don't get that channel, and they don't care to share it anywhere.
But one of the guys, the main guy, the artist, Flanagan,
yeah,
came up with this dumbass idea. And I swear to God, I was like, what the fuck is this? First of all, it was an episode with the great Ernie Hudson. So they had like an awesome actor there. Mm-hmm. And he came up with this stupid idea that they drive around in an ice cream truck and sell comics instead. But they dress up like they were selling ice cream. So what you got is a bunch of kids freaking out, right? I mean, they're like, can I have the double chocolate cone with – and they're like, sorry. But you could only buy comic books.
Yeah, I want a rocket pop.
Yeah, they wanted a rocket pop, and all you saw was a bunch of depressed kids. Like, oh, you could buy this issue of Ghostbusters from IDW, or you could buy Kevin Smith's $6 Million Man, and they're like, what the fuck? I don't even like comic books. I want some damn ice cream.
This was a bait and switch.
Yeah, what a crazy idea. Because they're not even in the realm of you're either hungry for something sweet or you want to read.
Why didn't they put comics on? Like, why didn't they make it a comic truck?
Because then they don't think they could draw the kids in.
So it was bait and switch.
Yeah, and then they were younger kids because these kids, they don't know Ghostbusters too well. I mean, some of them knew it, right? But they didn't know, like, who Ernie Hudson was. Because they're young kids. We're talking about a couple generations, you know? Right.
And they may have seen Ghostbusters.
They may have seen Ghostbusters, not. But when you're a kid and you're, like, 12, do you really care about who the actor is, really?
Right. You have no idea. You know the character, maybe.
You know the character name, maybe. Like, Han Solo, but you don't necessarily associate it with Harrison Ford.
Yeah, Harrison Ford, right.
Yeah, so I thought that was bizarre.
Weird. So it was a failure.
Yeah.
Was he at least sketching?
The Flanagan?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't. He's a good artist. I like his art, but
he's
such a weird guy.
And the one thing I don't like about that show is a lot of it seems like it's just staged for the TV show.
Oh, it's totally. But so is Toy Hunter was too.
Yeah. Yeah, we know that firsthand.
We know that firsthand.
Or secondhand?
They would really go places, but if they didn't find
if you didn't have enough stuff, they wouldn't give you stuff.
They would plant stuff. And somebody brought in something really cool though. It was like a comic book, one of the first comic book conventions, and it had like Jerry Robinson, Bob Kane, Stan, like all the signatures in the back of the like convention magazine, or what do you call it? The agenda?
Yeah.
Or program?
A program.
Yeah.
Wow, that'd be awesome.
It was because of the signatures. It was a unique set of signatures from a lot of like creators that are like superstars. You know, like it had Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, Bob Kane.
And that would be cool just without the signatures, just to look through and see.
Yeah, yeah.
And cry that you weren't able to go to it.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
What'd they give the guy, $50?
No, he wanted like, I can't remember what he wanted. It was like in the grands, and they're like, we can't give you that. A lot of times they just turn down the offers because they know they can't get money for it, or it's hard to sell, or
yeah, the guy's better off taking it at
the auction, and then you'd have to authenticate. You'd probably have to have somebody authenticate it, right? To make sure that somebody didn't just write that.
Oh, add some additional signatures on there.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm still watching that show.
Yeah, it was entertaining.
It's even if some of it is staged, the part I like is not necessarily them goofing around, but some of the products they
bring. Some of the history they tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was always good.
They bring cool toys in or unique comics that you'd like to see that you don't normally hear certain people talk about.
I mean, occasionally they talk about the business side of the comics.
Yeah, occasionally. But, yeah.
Kids off the internet. Son of a bitch. All right, hold on. I'm going to go kick them off. I'll give them 2 minutes.
Two minutes of YouTubes. Maybe they're doing their homework. I was just talking to another parent recently. And they said they're teaching the kids on the iPads now. That's got to be like really distracting.
Yeah, I know that in some classes I think in my son's class they do use the iPad.
But this is like mandatory. In other words, they check out all their assignments are on their iPads or the iPads.
All their homework's on the iPad.
Yeah, so what they're not learning is they're not learning how to type. They don't know what like a mouse or a keyboard are. They're learning to type, finger type, on these flat screens.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's bizarre is they're like doing math things, but they can pull up calculators and shit like that. So back in the day, it was like frowned upon, at least in elementary school, to bring a calculator.
Right, we weren't allowed to have calculators.
You weren't learning how to push numbers into the thing. You were learning how to do it in your mind or to figure out the problem in your head.
Yeah, you couldn't use calculators till you got to the more advanced stuff.
Yeah, or you used a scratch paper, and now they're doing it all on iPads. It's just insane. And I imagine that technology will eventually lead it so you're eventually talking to Siri instead of typing. I can't imagine like coding stuff. Okay, for I equal 1 to 10, return. Yeah, that'd be weird.
Parentheses.
Are you still having low bandwidth?
It says it's okay now.
Okay, they just snuck one in there.
Yeah, they snuck a quick one in there. I think they're playing a game, so it must not be too intensive.
Or maybe it downloads everything and then
it yeah, I think that's what it is. I think it runs locally on the machines and then shares something. I don't know. Technology. It's beyond me now. Not really. Because I work in technology, but sometimes it's beyond me.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes I get in too deep. Have to back out a little bit.
Where's my crayons? Where's my slide rule?
Where's my comic books? My mind can't take it anymore.
Speaking of comic books, you were gonna give me a thesis of what Intersect was, and let me know what the hell happened in that.
I don't
convince me to change my mind about buying that book.
I said no such thing. I said I was going to read it and see if I understood it. And I think I kind of understand it. But, yeah, wow, this is very obtuse. Is that the right word?
I don't know what it was. It was so... I think... Harley! Shh! She has a lot to say about Intersect.
I know. She's upset.
This is her critique about it, because I actually read it to her.
Oh, no. Not, and ever since then, she's been...
Well, she likes comic books that are a little more grounded in reality. And this one was like, why are they, like, stitching up pieces of the skin and sticking their hand in it? I don't understand.
And it, okay, so let's start. So first, I love the cover because I got the Jeff Lemire cover. So fantastic cover. Are you there? Are you muted?
I'm muting because Barb's coming near me and Harley's screaming like a banshee. I have Intersect here, so she's really upset.
She can't take it. Okay, so this is by Ray Fox. Art and story by Ray Fox. And the art is beautiful because it's like a watercolor. But it's not in like typical panel layout. It's kind of each page is a splash, basically.
Do you remember that guy Dave McKeon? He did like the Black Orchid series of DC and stuff. It reminded me of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's similar. I think there's more white in this, though.
Yeah, white. Well, his was more was like inverted of that, but I'm just talking about the painted style,
the watercolor.
Yeah.
And this is a story. This story really does jump into like the middle of the action because it starts with these two girls who, and so that's all I know from this story. It starts with two girls. From there, it's just going to be my interpretation of the story. That's all the facts I know. It starts with two girls. But one of the girls...
I got that much out of the story. Jesus Christ, I thought you were going to give me some kind of insight to this thing. Well, son of a bitch.
Here's what I was able to gather. So, and apparently... One of the girls or both of them have the like two personalities inside their body, or they can flip between, like, the one girl can change into a boy. Cause when it starts, she's like feeling her boob.
Yeah. That's the only part I got out of this story. There's two girls and one's filling her boob. That was my synopsis. And that's why Harley got so upset.
So there's these. So they. It seems like they can change. Like there's two people in one body, and then they're on the run from something, but they don't really like say. And then they end up going to. Then they fall off a building, but they don't die. You remember that part?
No, I was lost after the boob. I was like, why is she touching her boob? Okay.
And then they're on the run, and then they meet some guy who, like, his body's, like, morphed into the ground or wall or something. And then people are talking in, like, weird verses that are, like, but the words are backwards and don't make any sense. And then, I don't remember what happened at the end.
Yeah, that was a good synopsis.
And then then at the end, there's some people watching them from the top of a building.
You make me want to buy it again.
And then the last 10 pages are just like, I don't even, they're like, what's it called?
A mind fuck?
Like, what's it called? Like, I'm blanking on the word. When you cut up stuff and paste it on a page.
Oh, like a ransom note?
Kind of like a ransom. I like that that's where your mind goes first. Yes, so it's like a ransom note. Maybe it is. Maybe you've just discovered something.
A collage?
I don't know. Like it's like a collage with all these words that don't really... Here, some of them are the things he was saying in the book, but then... Here, let me read you a passage. The city is clothing. Also, and the style. Thousands encouraging campupate. The temperature is several empty small.
Did you say campupate?
Can pupate, yeah.
What the fuck is that?
Pupate, isn't that when you like change from a...
Oh, you said pupate. I thought you said compupate.
Compupate.
I'm like, what the fuck is that? Oh.
Can pupate. Mm. All right, where was I? The temperature several empty small, usually adult. Population subcultures. Music the dominant signal. Which buildings mean certain travel?
I don't know what the fuck you just said.
We will sing to you, we will speak to you, but you can sing back. You can speak if you have enough control. Oh, wait, that's just them trying to tell, that's them telling you to email them. And then there's a bunch of like random codes of some sort, which I don't know. Perhaps there's a way to translate it.
Well, so what did you get out of this? Like, did you say I gotta sign up for issue 2?
Nah.
It's so weird though, because I like Ray Fox, like, but I've never read any of his indie stuff, any of it. I've only read his mystical stuff, his Batman, his, you know, his Constantine, his Wolverine stuff, you know. All the stuff that's mainstream. And I thought because of his, he always seems to be in line with Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent. And I like those guys' independent stuff. Do you know what I mean? Right. I really do. So I was like, I'm going to jump all over this and pre-order fucking everything without
all in.
Yeah, for sure. And then I immediately read that, and I was like, my God, what the fuck did I just read? This woman's touching her tit. This ransom note at the back. I don't know what the fuck is going on.
There's something with butterflies.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell is this cocoon and butterflies and being stitched? And I was like, I just don't get it. I didn't get anything out of it. Like, if you told me, at least you were able to somehow describe the incoherent stuff. I couldn't even get that far. And I did read it late, but God dang.
Yeah, it's rough.
Even if I was like so alert, there was nothing in that made me enjoy it. And even though the art looked pretty cool, like the watercolors and stuff, the story was so incomprehensible that I just couldn't
enjoy it.
Yeah. It's like, it reminded me of like abstract art, like something that's really abstract where you have like five people looking at it and each of the five people could look at it and, say something different. And
but I don't think that's the case, because I think there's an actual story there that makes sense. It's just we don't have enough information to the way it's presented is so strange that it's hard to decipher it.
I don't know. It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it was a rough one. So it'd be curious to see if
I still have one issue coming in because there's nothing I could have done about it. But the way I order from DCBS, sometimes it has that little pen and eraser, like edit mode when you place your order.
Yeah.
I immediately went in there after reading that and erased it.
ear. No. Well, maybe the second issue.
I'm not saying that some other people might like it. Like, I don't.
Yeah,
I don't want to be negative on it. This did not hit me or on any level. Do you, does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. I think if you like complex stories that aren't clear and you have to dig deep and reread, and you probably have to read the second issue and then go back to the first issue to try and figure it all out, then you might like this. But if you're just looking for a story that you can understand, then you're not going to really find it here.
Yeah,
at least not in the first issue.
This was like beyond some of like Grant Morrison's stuff. Like I could follow him, even in his weird states. I could get something out of it and some flow. And
well, this has weird back. People are saying weird like backwards poems and in some of the pages like text boxes or the captions. The word balloons are like behind other word balloons, so you can't read them all. And it was rough.
Yeah.
But there may be gold in there. If you're willing to.
And I'm letting you discover that gold. You could become so rich.
You're out.
I'm out.
You stepped into the into the mine shaft and said, nope.
Yeah.
You got to the boob and then turned around and said, that's enough for me.
I said, the boob was nice. Yeah. But I need some story behind the boob, and I didn't get that.
Yep.
Somebody out there had to like this.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Well, and that's the thing, knowing that his other work is...
Well, we Are Nerdy rated it 4 out of 5. So I guess you could go there and check out their review. But they start off here saying, this was a weird one. I was intrigued by this book's cover and art style. After doing some research in the comic, after my initial reading, I discovered the plot seems to be about body possession, as in body shifts and merge. Warning with himself. Even the review I can't even understand.
He's been... What's it called? Contaminated. Story has taken over.
Outside of the initial jarring experience I had with the book, Ray Fox's writing is actually pretty strong. So this guy really liked it.
Yeah, but it's definitely
but
one
but
that...
I don't know if people like force themselves to like it based on the complexity of it. Like, this is different. Well, it is different. I'll tell you that. It's not like anything else I've read in the last 10 years, I swear to God.
I don't think there's any way that you couldn't read the first issue through and be like, what the fuck did I just read?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. But maybe after you go online and do some research and read it again and try and figure it out, then you can come up with, you can see the value in it. But
I'm going to read this in detail once I... have time to read it in the web, but he summarizes it by saying prose, beautiful art, which is kind of what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy, intriguing in ideas. Cons, very confusing experience, not long enough to expand on its ideas. See, to me, if that's the case, which I would somewhat agree with the pros and the cons,
mm-hmm.
the cons outweighed so much of the pros that it just took me so out of the story that I was like, very, very seldom do I go into a comic and want to stop. Like,
mm-hmm.
it is very rare, Bill. I'm like talking about maybe one comic in every 5 years I hit that I really don't want to finish.
You can't get through.
I just like, why am I putting myself through this? Other than I paid $2.99 or $3.99 for it. This was $2.99, right?
Yeah, $3.50.
Oh, $3.50. Other than I paid for it, and I gotta at least see if there's some kind of payoff. But yeah. Man, I swear I was halfway through that book and I just wanted to stop.
Well,
and as I got deeper, I hated it more. So I
didn't get better.
Well, I understood the first. Like the first part of the story and the titty part, and then I was lost.
And
but I was grateful,
like,
I was so glad because you know me, and I have this tendency to just order books and read them later. Do you know what I mean? Read them once I have four of them or whatever. I was so glad I decided to read that early because I was excited for it. I was like, I wonder what he's going to do because he seems to be – his skill set seems to be – into the mystic stuff, like he does really well, like Pandora and Constantine. Even in the Batman realm, he tends to write about the mystical stuff. So I was like, I wonder what he's going to do on his own stuff. And then it really didn't. But I want to go read some of these reviews. But if I just look at the high level, most of the people were, even the people that liked it were like jarringly confused. And I think that's not a way to sell a book. Maybe if he gave like a synopsis, like at some of the, you know, at the beginning of the book and said, here's what I'm trying to achieve, or.
Well, he specifically chose this method of telling the story because he could have told it more in a more straightforward manner, but. He wanted to throw you in. He might be trying to throw you into the mindset of the people in the story, like what they're going through, yeah. Having these weird bodies that are, I don't know, two people in one or changing or whatever they're doing or possessed. Or
multi-personality type thing. I don't know.
Yeah, so I think he's going for like a disorienting type read intentionally because that's what the people are going through in this world. But he's going to – I imagine he's going to lose a lot of people after this first issue.
Well, if he lost me, that's it's a hard thing to do, I swear to God.
Yeah, you usually give things another chance.
I usually go three issues,
it'll be interesting to see. So are you going to read the second issue, like, as soon as it comes out to see if you...
Well, I ordered it, so I might thumb through. I might read like four pages, and I
just
swear,
to see if it's any clearer.
if it is anything like the first one, I am not going to waste my time.
Yeah,
I am. I'm just not going because I disliked it that much, and I maybe there's gold there, like you said, and there might be, and I'll miss out on the gold. But as a single issue. That did not work.
Yeah, especially when you, like, there's sometimes when you read a page and you get to the end of the page and you have no idea what anything meant on the page.
Well, me and you have talked about stories that are kind of weird and abstract, like Dark Engine. It's pretty weird. It's about this girl, like this barbarian girl that's half naked that could like travel through dead animal carcasses and come out with a huge blade and fight shit. But it's weird, but I'm like mesmerized by the pencils. In this case, I guess I wasn't. There's stories that me and you don't necessarily describe very well, but like we enjoy it for some other reason. This one just didn't hit me on any level. So
right.
But I'm glad that. Some people are liking it. Like I'll give it this. It's different. It is different. I haven't read an Image.
A different experience. Yeah.
I haven't read this comic. I mean, a comic like this in a long time. So I'm waiting for you to buy the trade and explain.
I'm waiting for you to read issue number two to tell me if it's worth getting the trade.
Well, me and you have different tastes, so that's funny that this guy said the exact same thing, that he had a Dave McKeon style of art.
All right.
Yeah, he said the exact same. Well, this is interesting. He says, overall, I should give credit to the reviewer. His name is Joss McCullough. Who says he's a huge comic book fan. He says, this last paragraph's interesting. He says, overall, while I initially felt really negative about my experience with this comic, mm-hmm. that describes my experience with the comic in that one sentence. Very negative. He says, I enjoy it more the more he thinks about it. Intersex seems like a series with a lot of big ideas and can grow to be a great horror comic. Though this first issue is very constricted experience, which needs to be a lot more breathing room in order to explain the core concepts and give readers a bit more to go on. You'll know before even reading this book whether or not it's for you. If you're into things like Neil Gaiman's Sandman or Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol, then it's probably worth checking out. Well, see, I understood Sandman and Morrison.
Yeah, I was going to say Sandman is very clear.
At least to me it is.
Yeah.
Maybe some of the art styles in Sandman?
Or the concepts, maybe? I don't know. Even the interior art in Sandman wasn't that wild. The covers were collages, but...
Yeah. Doom Patrol had some weird shit in some of those books, but... I guess because I knew... The more you read Doom Patrol in Morrison's run, the weirder it got. But it started off in an understandable form.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if he had followed that formula where I could get to know some of the characters and I knew where the storyline was going, I think I would have liked it more and then become more abstract.
Yeah, because you could have done that.
Then I have something to set my hat on and say, oh, I want to be along for the ride because there's these bits and pieces that interest me. And I might run into this weird and that weird, but I want to see how this little hook resolves itself. I read this and I didn't really care. And I like the horror genre. We're big into the horror genre.
Now, how is this horror?
I don't know. I that's what he's saying it is. I think it was more of a dual body thing or psychological thing. Morphing,
and they were on the run from someone. So more like a thriller, maybe. Like a...
Yeah, like an Alfred Hitchcock thriller, maybe. Where really Alfred Hitchcock horror. Is like... I don't know.
Like a trippy.
I'm reading this in all fairness. I'm reading this review at Hodgepodge, so I'm not giving it a full understanding. But that guy liked it, and I'd be interested to see. A lot of these people are giving it. Well, look at this one. Okay, you've heard of Bloody Disgusting number one. I mean, Bloody Disgusting number one. BloodyDisgusting.com, right?
Yeah, Bloody Disgusting, like a horror reviews or something.
Their title of this is Intersect number one is truly terrifying. So I guess it is horror. We're missing something, Bill. I was terrified to turn the page.
I was terrified that I wasn't at the end of the book yet.
I was terrified to find there were more pages. So people, I think, are flocking to this and loving it. And then there's probably a good portion of it that feel we like I do. I think you're on the fence. Like you could if you did buy like me, you might stick around for one issue to see where it was going, right?
And there was one, I'm flipping through it now. There was one page, like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So the fifth and sixth page, it's kind of like a two-page spread type thing, but I wasn't sure exactly how to read it because I don't think you read it down. I think you read it like in a circle, maybe.
Oh, I got lost in that thing too.
Because I started reading down, but then I'm like, no way, I think I'm supposed to read like in a circle.
No, I read down and I was like, what the fuck? And then it was one of those things that you're like, even if I read in a circle, will I get more out of it? And I said, no, it's not worth it.
Nope, it still doesn't make sense.
A lazier reader, I guess, than some people. But there are a lot of people that love this thing. At least gave it 7.5 to 8 out of 10.
He needs to bring out the annotated version for me. To explain each page, what it means.
Intersect is working on many levels by the way of plot is sort of hard to explain. One thing is common between all these reviews is that nobody knew what the fuck this was about. I've come to this conclusion.
Even if they loved it, they still don't know what the story is about.
They don't know what the fuck this... And everyone's saying something different other than it's horror. Which I thought it was a comedy, but...
Yeah, I was just going to say, this was the best comedy book of the year.
God bless him. I love your work, Ray, but I'm going to jump out of this one.
Well, if he... like, he has to know... He had to have known that when he released this book, most people weren't going to understand it, right?
I hope so. Or either he knew... Okay, let me ask you this question. Were you familiar with his work? And I'm not talking about DC or Marvel. Put that shit aside. Were you familiar with his independent work?
I think I read one thing by him.
Okay.
But no, I'm not really that familiar with
him.
Yeah,
so I wasn't. I only read stuff from the big two. And you know, I read a lot of independent. It's not like I just circle around the big two. I just hadn't read anything from him. My introduction to Ray Fox was through DC Comics. And now he's moving to Marvel to help with like the Wolverine and the Charles Soule. And I'm following that because I'm a huge Charles Soule fan. So He's interleaving his stories with Charles. So it's like Charles will write one and then he'll write one. Charles will write one, he'll write one. And then he's kind of doing that with the Batman Eternal where they have rotating writers. I like all that stuff. But this was my first. But like my first works with like Matt Kent, like mine was Super Spy. I read that and I was like, who is this guy? I have to seek out every, you know, the next thing and the next thing. And then it just kept building. And then I just liked everything. And then like Jeff Lemire. Yeah. I haven't read like probably his biggest work. But I have read like Underwater Welder and a few of his other pieces. Well, like Sweet Tooth and a lot of other stuff. And I've liked it a lot, but in all fairness, I wasn't aware of Ray Fox. And if he had done, if I had read something else, I might not have gotten this.
I think I read one Soul by him, but I don't remember it. And to be honest, I don't think I liked it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it well enough to...
I will say this. He's a really cool dude. I did get to meet him.
Where'd you... Denver?
Baltimore Con.
Baltimore.
And I talked to him for not that long, but like for 10 minutes. And... I did talk to him about this book briefly. I was like, yeah, I pre-ordered it. I'm waiting to read it. I love your Constantine and Pandora stuff, and I'm ready to jump into your independent stuff. And
you don't remember what he said about the book, or you do?
No, because we didn't talk about it in detail.
Yeah.
I was focusing more of my conversation on Constantine and Pandora in the ties into the DC universe and...
So he didn't say, like, well, let me know if you understand any of it.
Yeah. This was just such a... I think when he put together issue one, he didn't give a... It was for him. Whatever he's trying to achieve, it was like, you're either going to get it. I think he knew they're either going to get it or they're not going to get it. And I'm hoping to grab those people that get it, and then they'll be passionate about it.
Well, and there's movies like this too. There's like experimental movies where
people
are like floating and landing, and you don't understand what they're talking about.
Didn't you have me watch that fucking Satan movie, or what the fuck was that? That was
that made sense. That was clear.
No, it fucking made no sense.
It made perfect sense.
Until the end, it made no fucking sense. I swear to God, I had to watch that in like seven sittings. But at the end of it...
Don't you remember when they were staring at that like stick in a bowl or whatever?
Yeah, that was another thing that was similar to this comic in the fact that I gave up four fucking times during that movie. But I will say, after watching that whole movie, it paid off in my mind. Okay. Do you know what I mean? I like watched it all and I was like, I get this now. I understand.
Yeah, it was all building to the last act, and then it went crazy in the last act.
Yeah, but I try to drop out. Imagine if that was a monthly title and I had them looking at a bowl for 32 pages. I would have fucking left, right?
Yeah.
What was
so we'll
that
have to
movie
see how
called?
He pays this off. Antichrist?
Oh, Antichrist. That's what it was, yeah. Wow, we had a really good breakdown of Intersect there.
People
Ray,
should
I
know
apologize.
Now.
I love your work, but this just didn't hit it with me personally. If you hear this.
Although we sure talked about it enough, so.
Yeah.
It sparked our imagination.
It sparked our. It provided some good discussion.
There you go.
As we tried to explore what it meant.
As we tried to figure it out. I think that's what he wanted, though. I think he wanted the people to have to delve deep and try and figure it out. Which is fine. I mean, it's just a matter of if that's what you're into and want to read or not.
Yeah, you're right.
If you want to do the work, then it's here. But if
people,
you just want to read a story, then
the people that liked it, I actually don't know how these guys review these stories, because it's got like five skulls and bloody disgusting. I don't know if five skulls is good.
Sounds good. Five of anything.
Five out of five.
Could be.
Man, this is so cool, though, that most of these people opening, like, by the way of plot, it is sort of hard to explain. The vaguenessness of the story sort of adds to the uneasiness of it all. What we know is that in this world, people shift or combine bodies, that some people have another person attached to them. And they have to take that. Have to take turns being conscious and in control. Wow.
Yeah, I kind of got that, but I still don't know what they're doing. Except for running. And I know nothing about the world or who they are or who's after them.
Well, I'm going to...
What they're going for. Why. And none of that.
I'll switch gears into something that's a little more grounded. I read number one. It's published from like, I don't even know who the publisher. It's like Azir or something weird. Arizern Publishing.
Arizern Publishing.
Yeah, they're pretty obscure. And it's called Number One, A Comic Shop Owner Isn't a Job, It's a Calling. And what it is an autobiographical breakdown of a guy, how he got into owning his own comic shop. Did you read this?
I did read this.
All right. Did you cover it? I think you might have.
I think I did, but you hadn't read it yet, so we didn't really talk about it that much.
Oh, it might have been when you and Micah did one show, and then you never got around to talking about it or something. Because you do that a lot when you guys did the show, is I think I want to wait till Mike can talk about it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that would have been
but
it.
This was interesting. And I think it was very concise, because it kind of gives you a behind the scenes of what a shop owner thinks, at least. And this guy was pretty unique, because he had a tragic event happen to him in 1965, where his house burned down and killed both of his parents. And he was a little child at this time. The firefighters actually got him out, and then he was raised by his grandparents. And his grandfather took him to the attic one day and introduced him to Golden Age comics, where they were fighting Nazis, and he became infatuated with comic books.
Right, that was his escape when he was a kid.
Yeah, that was his escape, and so much that he met some pretty loyal and lifelong friends through comic books. It seemed like of the guys, the other guys were a little more grounded, and I don't want to say that as a bad thing. I just want to say they were grounded more in their goals in life. One wanted to become like a insurance guy, and the other guy wanted to become a lawyer of some type. And then this guy didn't really know what he wanted to become. And it's weird when you look at things like this, because I was always raised, wasn't raised with a lot of money, that's for sure. You know, my dad was a fireman, my mom was part-time bookkeeper, but she very part-time. And you kind of want your kids to succeed, like financially, to not live paycheck to paycheck, and to have a life, but to love their life. Like there are people that live paycheck to paycheck and they absolutely love their life. Like that's their life and they love it and they don't need money and who cares. But my philosophy has always been earn the money, or find out something that you like that earns money, but then have your passion, use that money, because you have the money, you can support your addiction of what you love, right? In this case, comic books, or anything else, movies, or
geek. Well, specifically, your goal was to make enough money so you could buy any comic book you wanted to buy.
Yeah, and not have to struggle with it. If I wanted to buy 100 comic books a month, I could buy it. Or if I want to go see a movie at any time, I don't have to worry about, do I have enough money? I just go see the movie, right? This guy seemed to be the opposite. And what he did was he fell in love with an accountant. an accountant that knew very well about money. In other words, he even mentions that his wife was very knowledgeable about money, and he would use her to help him manage a lot of the stuff, because this guy understood comic books. He really understood comic books. He not necessarily understand how to make it profitable, or how to keep the system in the green, or whatever they call it, in the black. His wife and him seemed like they had a really good relationship. Like it was a solid relationship and had a lot of interesting conversations, but led to divorce because of money. It led to his ruin because of his passion for this thing that was not bringing in money. And they did have some glory times. He talks about like the 90s where there was the boom and the investors.
And he to go made, back, didn't he buy like the comic shop that he used to go to?
Yes, like, yes.
He didn't want to do it anymore, so he
that was interesting in itself. When he was younger, there was a hippie that he knew very well, and they sold like drug paraphernalia. And
as a comic book / head store.
Yeah, it that eventually became a comic book store, and this hippie that was running it, God bless his soul, because I am envious of people that just follow what they want to do and they don't give a shit about money, because that's like the opposite extreme of me, right?
Right. But I do
admire it, because I admire the fact that their brains don't think I need this stuff to survive. They'll find a way to survive. When you have that in your brain that I'll find a way to survive, that is fascinating, right? I mean, I think it is. Because this hippie guy, he just basically said, I don't have a passion for this stuff. He says, I want you to buy the comic store because you love this stuff. And he did love comics, and he loved selling them, and he even gave comics for free to kids. Like he said, oh, here's your Walt Disney comic and all this stuff. And he did share stuff, which to his wife's chagrin, because she thought he should pay for all this. You know, he wasn't making money.
And wasn't she opposed to the idea in the first place of him buying the store?
Oh, yeah. She was opposed to it.
Because of the money side of it.
They met in college. He got his degree in, like, literature. And her degree was in accounting, and she obviously was making money, but her money was going back into the store. So that would cause some, anxiety and stuff, because she wanted to move forward in life, and he seemed to be in this circle of hell.
Especially being an accountant, and she's looking at the books probably and being like, why are we doing this? We're losing money.
Yeah, why are you buying this stuff? You're not selling it, or, you know, why are you focusing on this? Or, because I think as a comic book person, it could be dangerous if me and you owned a store. Although we do take away our engineering backgrounds. one thing about engineers is you become problem solvers, and by our nature, we think with the side of our brain that we would look to maximize our profits all the time, right, Bill? Don't you think?
Of course, yeah. We'd be very analytical about it.
But at the same time, you could have the other kind of person that invests in their passion and what they love, and not focused on the intake of money, which could be, I guess, harmful. But I don't get the idea of this Gary Scott Beatty, or I think that was his name.
Yeah, Gary Scott Beatty.
I don't get the impression that I think he was smart on the comics. Like, he knew the comics and the geek culture. Mm-hmm. I think it's tough to own a comic shop. I really do. And because people's incomes change all the time, and things come up, and then you have kids, and health issues happen, and sometimes your income isn't always – your expendable income isn't always consistent. Or you have to buy a car, or you have – things come up in life that you have to do. This led to his he bought the store. The store had its ups and downs. Like, he even explains, hey, I made a lot of money during the 90s, like when there was the explosion.
Yeah, that was the one. I think the most interesting thing for me, besides the personal stuff, was when he's talking about the waves in the industry, the highs and lows.
Yeah.
Kind of the history of comics through the 80s and 90s and 2000s.
And he was a good shop owner, and the reason I say this is because I've seen good shop owners and I've seen greedy shop owners. And what I mean by a good shop owner is that if you pre-ordered Superman number 75, The Death of Superman, he would give you Superman 75, even though he could have made,
yeah, put it in your box
20 times the cover price in that. He put it in your box. Not only did he put it in your box, but because you were a loyal customer, you got 25% off. Well, when Death of Superman came out, I had two shop owners. I was kind of like, do I go to the shop that's closer to my job, or do I go to the shop that I've been going to forever? And what I learned during that whole experience is that one shop owner was shafting me on my pull list. I've been a customer forever, and for some reason, if there was a book that I pre-ordered that was valuable, it didn't make my box.
Didn't make it into your box.
And it pissed me off and had me migrate to another shop, and it didn't take long horrible. To do. There are shop owners that do that. My my current shop owner will, if you pre-order it, you'll get it and you'll get it at discount. But what he does that I don't like, and this is just me personally that I don't like, is if that book becomes hot within the month, he'll pull the existing copies that he has off the shelf and tag them for a percentage of what they're
going to mark them
on eBay. For example, he will take Thor number one, even though he has a ton of them, and mark it up $5 or whatever just because it's a hot book. Or he did this with the Spider-Gwen. That's a hot book right now in the Spider-Verse storyline, where he took that just that one issue and marked it up. And what that means is I like to go to a store and see that they have five copies of or five issues back to back to back of a story arc that I didn't pre-order. And I say, that looks interesting. I think I'm going to buy Spider-Verse, Edge of Spider-Verse 1 through 5. And I grab them all. And then I realize that one of them's marked up to like $8. And I'm like, what the fuck? I ain't going to buy that for $8. That's going to be in the quarter bin in 2 years from now. So I put it back. But in all fairness, I can't complain about that because I get what I pre-order.
He's not pulling it from your box. He's not raising the price on the ones in your box.
It's just if you're a shelf buyer, you might, and you don't buy it on the Wednesday that comes out, or you wait a month, then you might get a price hike.
It's his stock, so I guess it's his.
Yeah, that's his. And he's been in business for, as long as I can remember. So he knows what he's doing. But this guy, what I liked about this shop owner is he would always guarantee his customers those things. And those customers, when he got into trouble and when he was going to have to go bankrupt and get rid of his business, they helped save that store again. And he did various things like the burn victims at the hospital he would donate comics to. And when his store – there was one girl that he would – early on in the career, he would give some free comics to the younger kids because he knew they didn't have any money. And his wife was like, why are you giving – charge them something? But he would do it. He'd give them some of the Walt Disney comics or whatever. Well, one of those people that he gave the comic to turned out to be like a newspaper reporter of some type. And she published the story on him that actually helped save his store. And what made this guy even more unique is he went to his grandfather finally passed away. His grandmother passed away early. And a matter of fact, he was a pot. He would smoke pot and do shit. And when his grandmother died, he was inside of the funeral home or the church. And he couldn't look. He kept on envisioning his grandmother, and he's like, I can't do this pot anymore. I can't do it. And he stopped smoking pot. And there's so much in this story just to talk about. You could just take the story apart and start talking about a bunch of different shit that's in this story. But he gave this girl that free comic book, and later on she wrote the report. And the grandfather had this attic. And most of the comics that were in that attic he'd given to him, so he was selling in his comic shop. But he did find, when the grandfather passed away, he found an Action Comic number one. And this Action Comic was no joke. It wasn't a 4.5 grading. It was more like an 8. We're talking about a very fine copy of Action Comics number one that could save his store and save his life and financially put him
– set him up.
What set him up to do something else or to continue doing what he's doing. But because of what's happened prior to this, he sold off most of his grandfather's collection. This comic existed. This was the last artifact that that his grandfather had, or the memory of his grandfather he had, and he couldn't get himself to sell this comic, even though it could save his business. Well, this story went out and was reported, and the community knew about this guy, and they kind of rallied to save his shop without him having to sell his Action Comics number one. But it was a pretty fascinating story.
Yeah, it was. Well, like, there was one part where he's talking about the internet too, like when the internet came around and people started selling comics online, how that affected them and stuff. So I thought that was interesting as well. Yeah, it was good. It was an interesting story.
Yeah, he does talk about his online store at one point saving his, like, actually making his comic shop profitable because he would sell those extra copies he had online. And then the advent of eBay, you know, kind of helped him out. And yeah, there's just a lot of interesting things in here. And then because of that, he was donating comics to the burn victims. When his shop got in trouble, the one guy from the hospital came by and said, I'm going to support you. I'm going to buy 500 books or whatever a month for these kids. Just make sure that I trust you. Just make sure that the content is, you know, safe.
No, he said no crossed.
Yeah, no crossed. You can't bring Avatar books into the Avatar. You got to be careful with Archie now these days because they're going dark.
Yeah, they got their dark line.
Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, there's it was a good book. I really enjoyed it. It had somewhat a happy ending. And it was cool how his friends, even when he was in trouble, his friends that was the lawyer and the insurance guy, they even said, hey, well, let us help support the store or buy a third of it. You know what I mean? But I don't think he ever had to do that, but they did call him up at the time of need. So, yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah.
The art was good, too. I thought it was very good for this type of story.
I'm trying to reattach my mic. There we go. And we're back.
And we're back. Welcome to Geek Brunch.
Welcome to Geek Brunch. What did I read? Let's see. Let's talk about... here's one. Where is it? Let me find it. Oh, we'll start with this because you didn't like it. I read Humans number one.
I did not say I didn't like it. I said it was kind of a 3 out of 5, but it was one of those that... Because I'm not looking to grow in my monthly books... That
right, didn't win you over.
Yeah, because I thought it felt like an episode of like Son of Anarchy or something like that. But and it took a unique flavor. Okay, now we're in a world where the gang members are apes. But there wasn't anything that made it be different. I could have put a human in there when it's titled The Humans. So I guess you could have put a regular Joe, regular.
Yeah, but they're apes, man.
I know, but I'll agree with you. It's it physically, the art and stuff was really good. It was just a story that didn't jump out at me as being unique, I guess.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was awesome. I just like the feel of it. Like, I don't know, something about I think they captured the feel of...
Oh, like when the biker monkey is getting his dick sucked? Is that what?
Yeah, they captured the sexual revolution with the naked apes.
The orangutan is...
The orangutan takes his pants off. Runs around naked.
I knew you would love that scene. That would... Oh, bye. That would push you over into the spy column.
Sorry, that scene alone. But I thought it captured like the feel of a biker gang in like the 70s.
You know, I don't know if you heard DC Noise, but those guys are calling you Bill Boner.
Hilarious. Like, I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah. Bill Boner, he likes those dicks.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I like humans where you didn't.
I don't say I didn't. I didn't look to add another book to my list, but I will say when I was at the comic shop, I was tempted to pick up the number two, but I thought if I thumbed through it, I would have picked it up, but I've been pretty good lately because I want to focus my money on some back issues right now. So
yeah.
I was like, hey, I'll wait on that one and increase my back issue inventory.
Well, and I'm getting the humans in single issues, so we're balancing out the.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what you say about number two then.
The comic.
So you keep the story aligned. Well, talk about it a little bit because I don't think I did it justice. About the general plot. I have to remember
what this was about. So it starts out where they're. It starts out where they're headed towards a funeral because one of their.
That's right. That's what the major thing was. Is there's two gangs and there's a conflict.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
So they go to this funeral, and then after the funeral, they have they're going wild because it's the 70s and they're a biker gang, so they're drinking and doing drugs and having sex, and then the rival biker gang shows up and they get into a big fight, and it kind of sets up like. Where the story is going to go. So it's basically about this like biker gang and the rival gang in town. And then at the very end, it appears that a member of their gang who they thought was dead is actually still alive. So.
Let me ask you this. You bought a Kickstarter or the online version.
You had
some, did this zero issue tell you like, oh, this guy died from this gang, and then this continued off from that?
I don't remember if there was a fight in the first one, but I don't remember if someone died or not. Yeah, I don't remember. So I don't know if this is a. I don't think it was a straight continuation of the zero.
I will say that I used to get every Image number one, and because I'm getting way too many books that I can't get to, I stopped because
there's a lot.
well, the last three that I've got, well, Intersect I didn't like at all. I keep on wanting to say Non-Humans. That was another Image book. This is The Humans. This one I liked, but
wasn't above the line.
Wasn't above the line. Like I was like. This is a cool biker gang book, but I don't know if I want to read it.
I like the colors too in it.
The art was good. Art was really nice. Good, but it wasn't the type of art like Dark Engine. I would say Dark Engine is never above a 3 for me, and the only reason it's not above a 3 for me is because of the story.
I hated the story.
But I'm saying the art, it'll always be awesome. A 3 book, but because I like to look at the art so much, I'm going to keep to get a 3 out of 5 book because I just love the art. And you know, with arts, everybody's different, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're going to like different art than I like. The art in Humans is really good. And then the other one I tried, I absolutely love the art. But I was repulsed by the story because of repulsed. It took me. Well, repulsed is a bad word. I was offended that it took me 3.5 minutes to read.
Okay.
What was that? It began with an R. Rasputin.
Oh, Rasputin. Yeah.
I even liked the story that was there. I just. I was like, man, that was 350 or whatever. And it was
nothing there.
It took me 2.5 minutes to read. And yeah. I love that artist. God, what is that artist?
Is that Riley?
Yeah. Rossimo. Or, no, wait. What is his? I got to.
Riley Rossimo?
Yeah.
Rossimo Riley. I'm trying to find my copy. Where is it?
Rasputin.
Yeah, I read that as well. I don't.
This is Riley Rossimo. And, okay, I'm going to preference this. I love Riley Rossimo's art. And I will try any book that Riley Rossimo draws. But here's the little thing, the little disclaimer. I have found that who he's paired with are the stories that I don't like the stories. At least 50% of the time. So I love the art on 50% of the books, but don't like the stories. The other ones I keep buying because I like the story and the art.
This one was written by Alex Kushin, who I think did that green whatever.
Didn't they do Proof together? I think they did.
Are they the Proof guys?
I think they are.
Yeah, they are. You're right.
So I love Proof. This one I'm on the fence with, though. I liked it so damn much as far as the art. And I really think there was a story there that I liked. Like, you know, that he was around that table and telling the story about, and then he had the ghost of his father back there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in that. And then there was that his ability to bring things back to life with the bear. Mm-hmm. I liked what I saw on the page. I was just, man, this is the quickest read. And then I'm in a mode too with the older issues, and I'm like, I was like reading I was reading a dollar comic. Do you remember those dollar comics that had 80 pages, and they had like four comics in it? I was reading like World's Finest as a dollar issue. Mm-hmm. It took me almost an hour to read, Bill, and I was like, you know what, that is a lot of value, and I enjoyed all of the stories, which was cool. But then I read this one, and it's like 2.5 minutes, and I think a lot of the thing had to do with when I read it, because mm-hmm. I just finished reading a book like an 80-page giant, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then I went to a book that I enjoyed, but it took me 2.5 minutes, and I'm like, oh, well, that's, I don't know about it. Kind of threw me into the other vein. So Rasputin, I will probably definitely get the trade, if not the next issue. But because of Riley Rossimo, and Alex Grecian has a good record with me too. So I just hope the next issue has a little more words or content or story depth.
Yeah, there was a lot in this one where it was silent panels. So depending upon your mood, you can either read them slowly or fly through them.
Yeah.
I liked it, though. I thought it was good.
Are you going to continue?
I'm not sure. If they do a cheap trade for the first trade.
See, how you're saying about these not sure is kind of how I feel, though.
Yeah, I liked it, but I guess I'm in the same place as you. I liked it, but there wasn't enough there to really win me over completely.
Yeah.
And maybe it is that there just wasn't enough content there to really grab me.
This one, I'm more tempted than on the humans to get the second issue. But it was another one that I didn't pre-order. So yeah, like you, like Dark Engine, you drop, you never coming back to that.
I didn't care for Dark Engine.
I've read three of the four, and
Do you understand it now?
I will tell you this: the story is not progressing very fast. it's really slow, but it's one of those ones that I read like maybe in 5-10 minutes. Or, you know, under 10 minutes. But then I go back and I look at the art and then kind of like read the story because I like the art so much. So, yeah. That's weird how we feel so different about these books.
I don't feel that much different than you about Dark Engine. I mean, I did like the art, but I'm not going to get it just for the art, so.
It has a weird appeal to me, and I can't describe it. The art is not sexy. It's more monstrous, but the way he draws that girl, I find her sexy.
Always comes down back to the sexy girl.
Yeah,
put a sexy girl in Michael Bay.
Sexy girl, man.
That's what was missing from Rasputin, a sexy girl.
But it had a sexy bear, so I want to come back to the bear. But
reincarnated bear.
I wonder if Rasputin 2 came out already. Did it? I don't know.
Might have.
I think it did, and I didn't. I didn't pre-order it. I'll let you know how number 2 turns out, but Riley Rossimo is he's good. I mean, I personally dig his art a lot.
Yeah, I like his style.
His style, it's a very dynamic art style, and it's like really appealing to me, to me personally. So I'll probably look for number 2. If it turns out it's going to be one of those books that is hot and the cover price has doubled, I will definitely not get. But if it's one of the ones that's on the shelf, I will definitely look through and probably get it. I'm even still tempted. I'm still on the fence with The Humans. I really am. Because I don't think it gave it enough.
Yeah, it wasn't heavy on plot. It was more style.
But style, I think there's plot. More there. And just
we'll
like
see,
there,
yeah,
there is with Intersect. I might read Intersect number 2 and say, I'm back on. Yeah. I have a tendency to do that too. I've done that before. I've canceled a book. And then I've pre-ordered. You know, when DCBS, you have a window to change things.
Right, you can edit.
But I've had another issue come in. I've edited it, stopped it, and then went back and re-added it because I really think you need at least 3 issues, honestly. But when I really don't understand something, it changes my mind. But I want to talk about a really weird comic book that I don't think you got, but Alice Cooper. Okay. And let me see who the creator is. The covers are phenomenal. It's from Dynamite Entertainment. It's written by Joe Harris, who is a pretty popular writer in the mainstream as well as other books. Artist is Iman Casalos. And I actually run a DC a Dynamite fan page on the what do you
Facebooks.
Call it? Facebooks. And he's actually a member of, and a lot of people actually felt the way I did, like about his art. He does a really good comic. But Alice Cooper is playing himself, Alice Cooper. And it turns out that he made a deal with kind of like a devil. But it was more like a show promoter that is some kind of demon. He's a small man, but he's a real asshole. He's a promoter that kind of like deals in souls and stuff like that. And he got a hold of Alice Cooper, and Alice Cooper was kind of working for him, and he found a way out, essentially. And then this kid comes into the storyline who buys an Alice Cooper record, like one of his first albums, and one of the kids that bullies him broke the record, and as he tried to put it back together, it started to play backwards. And it looks like that kid has now become linked to Alice Cooper. And it turns out to be a pretty interesting story, even though it's like whacked out and bizarre. It is, he like goes to his world, his nightmare world. And Alice Cooper is interesting for me because I did buy his Marvel comic. It was like in Marvel Premiere, one of those things. Just like Kiss was in the Marvel comics at one time, Alice Cooper was in the comics at one time. And
I remember that.
He's kind of known for his theatrical performances.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a shock artist. Sorry. And they play that into the comic book. And what was really cool is the first issue had me hooked because his whole job was to kind of like get this boy band popular guy that all the girls love to sign his demons list and become one of them. And he actually got out of it, and it was really well done the way it was done. And so they have three issues out of this series, and I picked this one off the shelf, didn't pre-order it.
I was wondering why you got this in the first place.
Well, Dynamite, I kind of like Dynamite as a publisher.
Yeah, so that, I guess you'd check it out in the first place just because it was Dynamite.
Well, it was Dynamite, and then I had the original Alice Coopers and the Marvel,
okay,
you know, premieres or whatever they came out in, and I enjoyed those. So I was like, I want to try this again. And you know what's weird? This is the weird part, Bill, that you'll say, what the fuck? I've never heard an Alice Cooper album. So that's...
Just know him from his comics.
Yeah, I just know him from the comics.
I've never listened to any Alex Cooper music, but I've seen, like, video of him before, like a video.
I think I might have seen a video or two, and yeah, there's one or two popular songs that will come on, like, a classic rock station that I'll hear, but I couldn't name one. Or, and that's probably, like, some of these people, like, screaming at their iPods, you motherfucker. Well,
guess I have no taste.
Let me just tell you this. Geek Brunch was started by me and Heath Holland. And Heath was a huge Alice Cooper fan. So every time I see hear Alice Cooper or see, I think of Heath.
Heath.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, he was into all that stuff.
Yeah. So that was Alice Cooper. Pretty interesting.
What has that artist done? Do you know what else he's done?
I can find out really quick because it's in my database.
Ooh.
Let
me whip out my database.
Jennifer Blood. Oh, he seems to be a Dynamite guy. Battlestar Galactica, Starbuck. All of it's Dynamite.
That Dynamite guy.
Jets, which is a Jennifer Blood series. It's all Dynamite. So I Alice Cooper, Jennifer Blood, a spinoff from Jennifer Blood, and Battlestar Galactica.
And who did the covers? Was it him or someone else? So I did see the covers.
Did you like them?
They're nice. They're kind of Dave McKinney-ish.
Oh, right? They're Dave Mack did the covers.
Okay. Yeah, that's that.
It does look like Dave Mack covers.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was
watercolor-y.
The art. Yeah. So,
cool.
Yeah, pretty cool series. I'd recommend it if you're interested in Alice Cooper or if you're interested into like nightmarish worlds or devils or demons, then you'd probably like this.
Isn't that an Alice Cooper song? Welcome to my nightmare.
Welcome to my nightmare, yeah. Matter of fact, it's like a world where he could go to where he's safe, where he's got this huge, like, python in there, and he's got this, like, agent that helps him do stuff, like his little Alfred, if you will, that used to be his old promoter, which they haven't totally fleshed out that part of the story yet, but it's interesting to me. Yeah, it even makes me want to like read the next issue with an Alice Cooper album and play it backwards. No, I don't know.
See if he appears behind you.
What else you got?
I got another Image number one, because I still get all the Image number ones except for Image number ones by writers who I don't like.
And I think I've switched the paradigm to get the Image number ones from only the writers that I
that you like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's one from a writer you probably like, Kurt Busiek.
I do like this one, but it fell into the one criteria where I don't usually like.
And talking animals.
The Black Sads and the. Yeah, talking animals. So I laid off of it. But one thing when I was thumbing through it, I thought it looked amazing, and I loved that it was like a double sized issue for a regular cost.
Yeah, so this is Tooth and Claw number one, $2.99, and it's 48 pages, no ads. So yeah, you're definitely getting your money's worth out of this one. And this ain't no 3-minute read either. So this is about. I don't think they actually say like when or where it takes place, but it almost seems like it almost read like it was almost like an Earth in the future where magic had been introduced to the world and then giving the animals intellect, and then the animals kind of took over. That's what it kind of read as to me. So we exist in this place now where there's animals who are in control of everything. There's different tribes of animals. Some live up in the sky in floating cities, some on the ground, and there's different. They kind of live with their races, but not really, like, because there's dogs, and then they have meetings with the pigs and the walruses and things. But the setup of this world is that the magic that enabled them to have these abilities to talk and to basically magic is a part of their life, like a regular part of their life. They do everything with magic, but now the magic is starting to die. So everyone's worried that they're going to go back to being just animals once the magic is gone. So they're trying to figure out a way to keep the magic around. And this one, the main character whose name I don't remember at this point, she proposes that they do these spells where they kind of combine the different magics in order to bring back, and I can't remember what they call them, the main character, the Great Champion, because the myth is that magic was introduced when the Great Champion brought it to the world. So they what they want to do is create like a time rift in time, grab the Great Champion and bring him back to their world so he can basically redo whatever he did back then to bring magic into their world. So they try and do that, and then it goes horribly wrong, and that's kind of where the story, the first issue ends. So I think I know why they decided to do the double size, because they wanted to kind of get that full first story in to hook you. Because I think if they had done it halfway, it would have, they wouldn't have been able to get the full story with all the hooks in. And so I appreciate that they did that. It's an interesting story. It's really well told, and like you said, the art is really. Who did the art? The art is by Benjamin Dewey. So this is really good. I'm definitely on board for this.
It seemed like a real dynamic type art. You know, it's fluid.
Yeah, the style.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really well done. And no small task, because he had to draw like every species of animal in this book. So anthropomorphized animals.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It was a real interesting story. So it's magic and talking animals.
Cool. That one I had all the formulas for me liking. It was just the me trying to cut back and the animals. But
talking animals. I have another one from Dark Horse this time. Ghost Fleet, the Ghost Fleet number one.
Well, that was one that looked interesting. What was who's that?
This is written by Donnie Cates, who did Buzzkill.
Oh, that's why I was interested in it, but I was interested in it after I found out he did Buzzkill. Yeah, it was like too late. It was
And then the art is by Daniel Warren Johnson, who does an online comic called Space Mullet, I think it is. But I think there's a Kickstarter for his... It's good. Space Mullet's good, too. His art's really... His art is kind of similar to the Buzzkill artist's style. That kind of that like scratchy a little bit style, but really good, really great. So the art is awesome. I love the art, and it is fantastic. The story was interesting. It kind of opens with this huge semi barreling down the highway, and it's flanked on each side by these kind of like armor plated almost SUVs. So like basically government looking vehicles. So they're driving along, and in one they jump to one of the government-looking vehicles, and there's two agents in there, and they're talking about one of the guy's wife is sick, and he's like, "Well, why didn't you tell me?" You know, they're fighting over that, and then the guy who's driving the truck says, "Hey guys, the other car, whatever, the other armored car next to us just stopped about half a mile back," and they're like, "What?" And then they're like, "Stops." So they stop, and then they see these cars driving towards them, and they're like, "Uh-oh, this is trouble." So there's a gunfight, and then the two agents get into the semi, and they're barreling down the road, and they're like, "What are they trying to do? You know, they can't break into this thing. This thing could withstand a nuclear missile." And they go on, and then they ram through some cars, and it's very exciting, like road, like a road rampage type of adventure. And then at the end, there's a kind of a twist, which I'm not going to spoil. And they kind of show what was in the truck, but they don't really. They kind of just like hint at it, so you don't really know exactly what was in the back of the truck. So that's kind of a mystery. It was good. It was very exciting. Lots of action, and it's an interesting setup with the story, with what was in the truck and what's up with the twist and where they're going to go from here. So, it was really good. Especially if you like Big Rig. If you like Big Rigs and
if you like US-1 from Marvel Comics, you'd probably love this comic. And Do you remember that?
Yeah, I don't remember
that. That was all about a rig driver.
I don't remember the story itself, but I remember the cover. There's lots of violence in this one, though. Like when they hit this one guy with the semi, and his head goes flying off, and there's blood everywhere.
Sounds really sounds like it's something that I would like.
Yeah, it was good.
That was one that I was like. In the bathroom one day where I look at previews and I'm like, they were promoting that book after the pre-orders were already in and I was a month off and it said Buzzkill guy. And I was like, "Oh man, I missed
son of a bitch."
Son of a bitch. And I think I looked for it at my shop, but it was one of the ones that he didn't order. So
yeah,
just one of those. If I had a bigger shop, I'd probably be able to pick it up, but I don't.
Yep. So it seems like it's going to be another winner from Donnie Cates. So
all right.
A name to remember.
Well, I have one that is another number one, and it seems like a lot of number one issues we're talking about. It's Shaft number one from Dynamite Comics, that bad motherfucker.
Shut your mouth.
This is by David F. Walker and illustrated by Bill Quis Evely.
This is a Dynamite, right?
It's Dynamite, yeah. It just came out this past week. Has a lot of different covers. I chose the Dennis Cohen, Bill Sienkiewicz, and Ivan Nunes cover A. but you could have got a Francisco Francavilla, a Michael Avon Oeming cover, Ulysses Faris or Matt Haley or Sanford Green. So a lot of different covers. I like the one that I had because it had a lot on it, and I had been reading a lot of Dennis Cohen lately because I've been on that Milestone kick. So I like that cover. This is like the backstory of Shaft, and opens up really. The plot is very simplistic so far, but the story's appeal is in the dialogue, in the time period, which is the 70s, and it's close to some of the source material, and I really liked it. It's basically tells you the backstory of Shaft. He's currently a boxer, and he's a pretty badass motherfucker. Like, and he doesn't like to be told things. Like, this is a time period in boxing where people were supposed to throw fights, and he doesn't want to throw the fight. And there's some pimp-looking guy that comes in and says, "You're gonna throw this fight." And there's some other guy that's dealing with this one guy that's telling him. So there's lots of levels of gambling that's going on, and he's supposed to throw this fight to this white guy, and he doesn't throw the fight. And the guy that's told to beat the shit out of him was his mentor at one time and was also a boxer, and he decides not to beat the shit out of him, but to do enough damage so people will believe it happened. But he's like, "Don't let anybody know that I'm letting you off this way." And it's basically he saw his mentor turn into a bone breaker guy for the kind of like a mafia, and he doesn't want to become that. He wants to stay a boxer and kick ass. But it shows like Shaft as a child, and then Shaft in Vietnam, and then shows him in his current situation. And I really, really liked it. And the cool thing at the back of this is, I guess when you're reading it, you're supposed to play some music. But it gives you a whole playlist for this issue. So cool. It was a cool issue. I really liked it. And I did pre-order the next two, and I'm glad I did.
Cool.
And a lot of the Dynamite art is kind of hit or miss, but I like the story. They seem to like get a lot of big name writers to write stuff, but then the artists are from overseas, and you probably never heard of their names. But the latest ones that they've gotten to work on, Alice Cooper and Shaft, have been really detailed and really good. I really like their art styles. So, Shaft!
Cool.
Any others?
I read Punk Mambo number 0 from Valiant.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. It was a one-shot, right?
Well, I like her. She's physically appealing, her look. And for her to be in the Shadow Man world is even more appealing. You know, the magic realms and the voodoo.
Voodoo.
Yeah.
Voodoo. Yeah, so this is a story. I don't read Shadow Man, so I don't know when she was introduced in the Shadow Man book.
I think she was introduced in Paul Jenkins' End Times.
Okay.
She might have been before that, but it was definitely Paul Jenkins, I think, that introduced her.
So this one shot's by Peter Milligan.
That's who it was. Who did I say it was? Paul Jenkins? It was Peter Milligan.
Okay. Yeah, because did Milligan take over after Jordan?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, there was an interim in there. I gotta find out who did End Times, but I'm pretty sure it's Milligan. Shadow Man. Go ahead and keep talking.
Yeah, so this is a one shot that kind of tells her history. So she started out as a preppy
That's Milligan.
Rich kid, and then how she went to London, or I guess she was from, yeah, went to London and became a punk, and then got suckered into getting captive, being a captive of this voodoo guy, and then eventually got her own powers and kind of rose to power, and now lives in Louisiana. It was good though. I enjoyed it. It was a nice little one shot. Strange for a Valiant book though, but I guess it fits into the Shadow Man,
yeah,
world.
Yeah, he was right, like you said, right after Justin Jordan, except there was a Jim Zub and Alice Cott issue in between there. But then he took over, and then his storyline led to the end times.
Okay.
I really liked Milligan's Shadow Man.
Yeah,
I'm on the Valiant podcast too, and those guys are not as into the Shadow Man that I, but I liked what some of the things that Justin Jordan did too. So I just think it was the most of all the titles, the most inconsistent, and that's why it hurt itself. At least I think it did. You didn't like it either, right? Isn't the Shadow Man the one that you didn't like?
I hated it.
But
left a bad taste in my mouth.
Are you talking about the Justin Jordan one or the?
Yeah, I only read the first trade. and I haven't gone back.
You didn't
back
even like
the
Master Dark stuff or the Zero issue? I thought that was really good.
No, maybe I liked the Zero issue.
I liked the backstory of the Master Dark and his sister. I thought that was pretty good. And I thought it had a good first issue, but you're on the side of those other guys. My other podcast, Chris Campbell and Daryl Taylor.
Yeah, it's three against one, so.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know what the fuck. I'm just a guy that likes to read comics. I like Shadow Man too, so I'm a little. I like voodoo books.
Yeah.
I find voodoo to be creepy, like a more realistic magic. Like there was a Serpent in the Rainbow. That movie kind of blew my mind. And Tales of the Zombie in the comic book. It was a magazine from Marvel Comics. And he used to always have articles, like prose articles about voodoo. He used to creep me out. And I'm a fan of the Shadow Man and its voodoo, even though the origins are so different in the new incarnation. In the old incarnation, a spider alien is actually, I think her name was Nena or something like that. She actually bit Shadow Man as a sexy woman and turned gave him his abilities.
Yeah, I never read Shadow Man back in the day.
Yeah, love Shadow Man. I just want to mention a couple other mainstream books. I got caught up on James Robinson's Fantastic Four, and I just want to say I absolutely love James Robinson when he's kicking on all cylinders. And the reason I love him is his passion for continuity. In other words, he'll pull in shit from obscure references and stuff, and maybe not a lot of people that just read sporadically will like that, but he pulled, you know, key strings of Fantastic Four history, including the Heroes Reborn, which is when Franklin kind of wished the Avengers and the Fantastic Four to be in a different world. It's tying heavily into that. And I think it's a pretty awesome storyline. I absolutely love it. And he's also doing All New Invaders, which for the same reason I absolutely love. his story arcs, and what he's doing with the original Human Torch is phenomenal. They actually took away Sue Storm's or the Future Foundation kids away from the Fantastic Four, because what he's basically doing is there's some character, and they haven't revealed it entirely, other than they've given hints that it might be Malice, which, if you're a Fantastic Four fan, was Sue Storm. If she got taken over by somebody else. She had a very punk rock outfit, if you look her up. It might be her. It might be Franklin that's causing this. Or it might be somebody else. But it's kind of like a deconstructing the team and turning them against one another. And it ties into the original Sin. That is really, really good. The other series I absolutely love from Marvel was Black Widow. I got caught up on that series, and it is a phenomenal monthly book. I think his name is Edmondson. He does a fantastic job of telling a solid story in one issue and then building plot threads. Like, you're satisfied with the one issue, but he builds plot threads on top of each other. Mm-hmm. That continue through the storyline, and then always ends with a good last page that really, like, damn, makes you want to come back to the next issue. I really enjoy that. And then The Swamp Thing by Charles Soule, phenomenal comic. I absolutely, like, it's one of those issues that I was, like, top of the stack. I got caught up on that, and then as soon as the issue came in, the next one, I read it immediately. But he's introduced you have the red, which is kind of like the animals, like Animal Man. You have the green, which is Swamp Thing, which is like the plants. These are different kingdoms in the world. And then you have the rot, which is basically death and destruction, which is Anton Arcane and his daughter now, Abby. And now he's introduced the metal, which is absolutely fascinating, which is machines. And as we grow forward in the world, machines are more prevalent, and they're more influential than any of the other things. And he basically introduces characters like Wolf and the Lady of the Weeds. He took down the Parliament of Trees, Swamp Thing did, so there's no more Parliament. And he took out into the real world the Lady of the Weeds, who's absolutely insane and will kill anything. Wolf and one other character, I think his name is Jeremiah. I can't remember his name exactly. And then he has this warrior woman, that's from the past, like the demon ages. But the storyline is, like, so damn good, and it's like issue after issue after issue builds on one another. So much continuity there. Another reason I love to see him write is every issue builds on one another. Everything counts. I feel like every issue matters. Mm-hmm. And it's so important. But the latest story arc is the Lady of the Weeds has become the avatar for the metal, and it's like the worst thing that could possibly happen to Alec Holland. It is like the worst. But the Swamp Thing has been phenomenal. The other one I want to mention that I saw a lot of people shit on, but I absolutely loved it, was Clarion, written by what's her name? Annie Vicente. Mm-hmm. Clarion, did you read that one?
I read the number first one. Yeah.
Did you like it?
I did. It was a little confusing, though.
Really? I thought it was pretty straightforward. It's essentially Clarion, who seems to be like a rebellious, angsty teen in the magic world of magic, mm-hmm. decides to leave and saves a boy from getting brutally beat up in the magic world. And becoming part of this museum, who's run by this curator, magic museum, that's absolutely fascinated with his powers and wants to mentor him. The things that I really liked about the issue, I think number one, introduced me to some topics that I had to Google to understand, because I didn't know the terms for them. One of them was the Rapunzel syndrome, which I absolutely found fascinating and entertained about an hour's worth of discussion around the Thanksgiving or holiday table when we were eating breakfast one morning. But Rapunzel syndrome is a disease where a kid or a adult has the compulsion to eat hair.
That's what I thought.
And collect it and eat it and eat it and eat it. And you can actually find pictures of medical pictures of them. They cut open the stomach and this hairball comes out of it. And it's like shaped like the stomach. And it causes them really bad digestion because you can't digest your hair very easily. And it just builds up and builds up in your stomach until you become violently ill. And these people would not only eat their own hair, but they would eat other people's hair and like carpet fiber, like hairs that were on the carpet. And it was just an insane disease, but absolutely fascinating. And then the other thing that they mentioned, and I had no idea what the term was ruin porn. And I know people that love this shit, but it's not nasty, but it's your fascination with seeing pictures of rot, essentially, or things that are
decomposing things.
Decomposing, like for example, like old cars just rusting and becoming part of nature, or like buildings that are condemned that eventually rot away. This is called ruin porn, and so there was things that Ann Nesenti threw in that comic that just provided hours worth of entertainment around the table. I really thought they introduced.
I didn't know that's what ruin porn was. I learned something.
Yeah, I learned a lot.
I like ruin porn.
I have two coworkers that are absolutely fascinated. One of them collects calendars of rotting. Like every year, he's got a car calendar of rotting cars, like in fields and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then the other coworker loves like rotting buildings, like old buildings that are just falling apart.
Yeah.
And
buildings are good. I like amusement parks. Those are my favorite.
Like rotting amusement parks.
Yeah, rotting amusement parks.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you're into ruin porn too, see? So
you can and Rapunzel syndrome. But hair is delicious.
You can just go tell Melanie after this that you're into ruin porn and see what she says. You said do it like this with a real serious face. Honey, I got to let you know something. I'm really into ruin porn. And just see what she says.
See what her eyes do.
And then let me know if she doesn't take your eyes out. But
I guess that, because there's like food porn, right? Which is looking at pictures of food.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a ruin porn. Mm-hmm. Ruin porn just sounds nasty, though.
It does. It sounds like it might be masochistic or... Yeah.
Stuff Daryl would like.
Yeah, yeah. So I learned a lot, and I think that her book, I'm liking her writing a lot. And this book is kind of like if you like a Harry Potter feel. There's a lot of teen angst, but he gets into a situation where there's other kids his age that are into magic, and the supporting cast is really interesting. It's really interesting.
I was trying to remember what confused me. I think I was confused by like he came to our world and then he like ended up at some hotel, but it was like a weird hotel.
It's like a magic wizard. Yeah, it's like a magic realm.
Yeah, I didn't really understand.
He escaped to another magic, not to Earth, but to another magic realm. And inside of there, he actually drove a taxi with like Beelzebub, which is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
But he took him to this school. That's where he rescued that one kid, and that one kid became a friend of his. But then he started talking to a girl who he didn't know was a love interest of that kid, and the kid turns against him later on.
Isn't there like a techno virus or something?
Yeah, there's like a techno band and a techno virus, and that one kid becomes part of that techno magic. And
yeah, that was weird.
I just really dug it. Yeah, so Clarion was another one that I really dug. I think that's all I'll talk about. But there was so many things over the holidays that I read that I thought was really, really, really good.
I did read Superior Iron Man number one.
I know when that came one out. Too. Yeah,
and I liked it. Tom Taylor. The gist of that is, or at least the first issue, is that Tony Stark releases an app that makes him beautiful, and then everyone's trial period runs out, and they have to start paying for it.
Yeah, but if you don't read the first part of the page. Or you know how Marvel does a good synopsis?
Yeah, they explain why he's
yep, they
a
explain
dick.
Why he's acting like he's acting, and it's basically the fallout from the Axis crossover. So,
right.
There was like an explosion that caused many of the heroes that were involved in that explosion to become evil, or have evil, to change their mindsets.
They're selfish, right?
Become more selfish or not as caring as normal, and Iron Man was one of them that was caught in it. Thor was the other, and I forget the other two were. Falcon was, and you can see Falcon is acting really weird in the Captain America book. So if you're interested in that follow that storyline into all the new titles, essentially all the new number ones from Marvel. So, you want to jump to film and TV?
Sure. Film and TV. What did I watch? Oh, we want to do films?
Sure.
I watched a documentary. Yes.
It's called Yes?
No. A documentary called shit. It's not called shit.
It's called
Finding Vivian Meyer. Now, I chose to watch this. I've actually been wanting to see it for a while. It's the story of the photographer Vivian Meyer, who and kind of how she was discovered. Because she was not discovered as a photographer until after she died, where a guy from Chicago he was at an auction, and they had a big box full of negatives, like photographic negatives, like a big box. So he bought it for like, I think it was like $380 or whatever. And he started looking through them, and he realized that they were really cool photos. So he tried to do research into this woman, Vivian Meyer. Well, first he found out who else bought boxes of her negatives from the auction and went to them and bought the boxes from them because he knew he was onto something. And then this movie is him researching her, trying to find out who she was, why she took so many pictures, and why she never showed anyone these pictures. And it turns out she was a nanny for most of her life, and she kept the camera around her neck and just took pictures of everything. And a lot of her pictures are like, she took a lot of pictures in New York. She lived in New York and in Chicago, like in the, I'm not sure when it was, 40s or 50s or something like that. So she has lots of pictures of like migrant workers and homeless people and kind of the downtrodden in these big cities. Fascinating photos. They're really, really nice photos. So part of it, and that's the main reason I wanted to see it, because I actually have a couple books that have collections of her photos that this guy has released. But this kind of told the other side of it, which is she's a very interesting, complex woman. So it was interesting to see, to learn about her life and to kind of the way the movie is told is kind of him discovering more about her and kind of digging into it, talking to people who knew her and kind of going through her, trying to find out about her life, more about her life. She was a so it's interesting, and there's a lot of interesting things about her. Like, she was a pack rat, and she liked to collect. She collected newspapers with the intent of cutting out clippings from them, and she would always cut out like weird clippings, like about murderers and kidnappings and stuff. So she had a dark. She had a very dark side to her as well.
Very eccentric.
So. Yeah, she's very eccentric. And everyone said she was really weird. And she did, she had some audio tapes as well that she made. But she took so many photos, like, I can't remember how many they said that she took, but, like, thousands and thousands and thousands of photos. Like, there's just boxes of... And not only were there boxes of negatives, there were also boxes of undeveloped film. Like, just huge boxes of undeveloped rolls of film that she never even got developed.
Wow.
It's a weird story. It's a good movie, though. It's really interesting to the discovery process. So I recommend it.
Like learning about different people. The human condition.
It's definitely the human condition.
Yeah. I think I only watched one movie. I saw Guardians of the Galaxy again with my mom and dad. But
I need to see that one again.
Yeah, it was... I've seen it 3 times at the theater, believe it or not. I've enjoyed it every time.
It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, me and Barb saw it when it was premiered, and then I saw it with my father-in-law, and then I saw it with my mom and dad. So, it was cool. I did see it in 3D this time just because it was at the cheaper theaters and all they had was the 3D one. Mm-hmm. I didn't really notice much difference today, truth. It looks pretty cool in a couple scenes, especially like the opening scene when he's going to look for the actual Infinity Gem, and he's kicking those dragons or whatever those monsters were around. He's got that one device that'll allow him to see old 3D images of how it used to be before it was destroyed, and. That scene looked pretty cool in 3D, but other than that, I didn't. Oh, the scene in Neverwhere where they were flying those mining ships, that looked pretty good in 3D. But
yeah,
saw that, and then I saw Horrible Bosses 2, which is very much like the original one, just slightly different. They decide to start their own business and be their own bosses and do these things called shower buddies. And, it was pretty good. It had its moments. It wasn't as good as the first one, but it did follow the same formulaic pattern. So if you like the first one, you're pretty much guaranteed to at least like the second one.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. There are some good Kevin Spacey scenes. And the one actor that was in the Quentin Tarantino movie as a German, he's in that. He's one of the horrible bosses. And then some really good scenes with the woman from Friends, Jennifer Aniston. She's the sexual dentist that has problems with sexual – I mean, she doesn't have problems. She's a sexual addict.
Mm-hmm. She was in the first one, right?
Yeah, there were some really good scenes with her, the really funny scenes. So, I'd recommend it for anybody that liked Horrible Bosses 1. If you don't expect it to be better than the first one, it's a lot like the first one, but just very different.
Cool. I saw another one. It's called Afflicted.
Afflicted?
Yeah, Afflicted. It's like a lower budget, like indie horror movie, but it was really good. It's filmed kind of like first person, so kind of like a Blair Witch style or whatever, where the premise is this guy, I can't remember if he's, I can't remember why they went, but anyway, these two guys decide, I can't remember why, but they decide to go to Europe because this is something that they want to do. And I don't remember if one of the guys is sick. It might be one of the guys is sick and dying or something, and he wants to go to Europe as like the last you know, before he dies, this is one thing he wants to do. So these two guys who have been buddies since childhood, and the two guys in it are actually the two guys who made the movie, who wrote it and directed it. And they are actually like lifelong friends who always wanted to do movies. So they came up with this concept. So it's them filming one another basically through the movie. And so they go to Europe, and the one guy is kind of like meeker and has trouble with women, but then the other guy like gets him to talk, like encouraging him to talk to these women. So he does finally talk to this woman in a bar, and they go back to his hotel room, and she ends up biting him, and he ends up contracting some kind of illness. So he becomes afflicted, and then he starts to develop like these weird powers and has a thirst for blood. So I think it's kind of a, I don't know if they specifically say vampire, if it's like a similar thing to vampires. It might just be directly vampires. So it's him trying to deal with like these changes to him, and he's trying to control. So him and his friend, now they realize what has happened. So they're trying to do two things. They're trying to get him blood, because he doesn't want to kill anyone, but he has this, you know, his body needs the blood. And they're trying to find this woman to find out, to try and get him changed back or whatever. So it was really good, and the effects are actually really good for what they probably spent on the movie. I think they said what they spent on it.
On both of these effects. Were they library things?
Yeah, library rentals. All my movies are library rentals.
Yeah, I just didn't know if they were like Netflix or Amazon.
Yeah, no, these were. Yeah, these were Afflicted's probably.
Because both of them sound interesting, but I looked on Amazon and Netflix, and they're there available, but only in DVD.
Oh, disc. Yeah, I don't know. I think they're probably both relatively new releases, so they probably haven't made it to streaming yet. Yeah, Afflicted's good, though. They did a really good job with it. And they actually filmed it in Europe, which actually worked out for them, because they were able to do a lot of the stunts that they probably wouldn't have been able to do in America.
Yeah.
Especially cheaply. Like, they have some where they, like, blow up. I don't know if they blew up a car or crashed a car. I think they crashed a car. And to do that in America probably would have been really expensive, but they were able to. Less rules over there in some small town in Europe. Mm-hmm. And they had a stunt. They hired a stuntman over there to do some of the high flying stunts and stuff. It was good, though.
Yeah, both of them sound pretty good. Even
it's interesting because it's like
Vivian Meyer thing. It just sounds like, what a weird woman, man.
Yeah, well, and it's so weird because her photos are so damn beautiful. Like, she had.
I never even heard of her, and it sounds like she wasn't even popular until after her death.
Well, no one knew about her because she just took photos and didn't show anyone. She said all these photos.
Yeah, that's fascinating in itself.
God, I love her photos. They capture the world like how it used to be on the streets in the 40s. And the show, it's cool because they show like Chicago and New York back then, you know, what it used to be like. It's cool.
Cool deal. I don't think I had any other movies. I haven't been watching a lot of movies lately.
What about television?
Television, it's pretty much the same as it's always been.
All S.H.I.E.L.D.
I'm all caught. No, I don't watch S.H.I.E.L.D. I watch Gotham, and it's still my favorite show.
I need to catch up on that.
It's my favorite show on TV right now. And then followed by Walking Dead, which I'm all caught up on. It's probably my second favorite show. And then it's a toss-up between Arrow and The Flash as to what my third favorite show is.
The Flash is better than Arrow.
I disagree, and the one thing I
I know you love
I actually love the Flash. Okay,
I know you love
don't
the
get.
Flash.
I
You love the
love
Arrow.
the Flash comics. I absolutely love, and it's the one hero. There's two heroes that hold a special place in my heart besides Omac and, you know, all this stuff. But Omac's really not a monthly character. You know what I mean? Flash, if you go to monthly characters that I'll always get, no matter what, through the good or the bad, it'll be Flash and Daredevil. Those are the two that have always been there for me and I'll always get, regardless of who's doing them. And I love the Flash, but I have a little bit of complaints with the Flash. One is until recently, I didn't think he was learning. Like, this guy is a smart guy. Like, he saved Ollie in the Arrow show. He's a smart guy. He's a, you know, a scientist, a CSI guy. He knows his shit, but he was very impulsive. And the last episode, I thought it was even funny how the guy even mispronounced his name. He called him Bart Allen, because he reminded me of Impulse. It didn't remind me of a scientist that would just run in there without thinking. And that was one of the things that bothered me. And the other thing is, he doesn't think about the ramifications of giving his identity to a lot of villains. He doesn't give a shit. And that is so dangerous in itself. Mm-hmm. Not who gives a shit if he endangers himself. That's his own prerogative. But when he endangers his Iris, which he absolutely loves, or his the guy who
Quarters.
Made him grow up, or his father that's in prison, that's a different story. And the other thing I love watching The Flash, but the other thing I think it is, at least the first few episodes were very formulaic. I thought it was, you introduce a villain. I always love the villain, so that was always a good part. The villain kicks Barry's ass. Barry can't deal with it, so he needs help from his little science team. His science team gives him information. He defeats the villain. He then shows the villain who exists, and they put him into a cell. And then you're on to the next episode.
And he wants to tell the girl that he loves her, but he can't.
And then he keeps this sexual tension between him and Iris, who's dating another cop. He always goes to meet her as Flash and then, like, disguises his voice and vibrates so she can't see him. And meets with her and eggs her on. And she keeps liking him until recently. But the recent two-part story arc, actually, I thought he learned a lot from Ollie. And the reason I think I like Arrow a little bit more is it doesn't fall into that formula. Like, yeah, you hate – I know, Bill, you hate all the actors in it and – you think it's like the pretty people and they're all idiots, but I think it's a little more different from episode to episode. And that's why I think I like it slightly more.
Yeah. I'll give you that.
I love season two. But both shows I really love. I'm just going to give them constructive criticism. I think in the two part crossover, I really think that The Flash did some interesting things, and Ollie got into his head that he should think before he runs. And I think that's something that I think he showed signs of in this two-part crossover. I really liked the introduction of Boomerang. I thought he was good. I love how it's all Spartacus cast. We have Deathstroke was from Spartacus. Boomerang was from Spartacus. Amanda Waller was from Spartacus. And the girl from that's Ra's al Ghul's daughter is from Spartacus. So we have four cast members that are from Spartacus, which is pretty badass.
Wow.
I love Cisco. I love his enthusiasm and his contributions to the show. It's still unknown what the doctor's doing. Dr. Wells.
Right.
He's still kind of interesting, but I think the previews for the next episode are going to advance the storyline quite a bit because it looks like it's Reverse Flash.
All right.
See what happens.
Yeah, and what's the? Yeah, they haven't explained what the deal is with him being able to see into the future, right?
Yeah, yeah. That'll hopefully come.
Because at first it seemed like he had like a newspaper from the future, but it's actually like a live version of the future. So he somehow has a gateway to the future.
Computer that tells him stuff too. So who knows? He's able to stand, and why is he able to stand? And then he fakes his injury. Who knows about that? And there's a lot of stuff. But Girder was a character that Barry revealed his identity to. He revealed his identity to Blackout, both which one of them I think is dead now. I just don't think he's thinking right. And I might be different than a lot of people in the fact that I like my stories like Gotham. I feel like every episode is different, but it builds. On the characters, it builds on the story. Arrow is different from episode to episode and builds that, even though I don't like it as much as season two. The Flash started to fall into a pattern, which I don't like a predictable pattern. In other words, where I could say the plot of the pattern and then I can use it as a cookie cutter for every episode. I know episodes like of X-Files have fallen into the Monster of the Week. I think that's a term that's used where it's the Scooby-Doo syndrome. And I love Scooby-Doo, but the Scooby-Doo thing is you have a mystery, you solve the mystery, and then it's those damn kids.
Yep, and the next episode there's a new mystery.
Then you're on to the next one, and it's the same thing. I hope Flash starts to vector away from that and become more of a character building that it started off as, at least I thought it did, and becomes more like the other series that I like that are different from episode to episode and not formulaic.
Yeah.
It's a sequential story arc rather than a standalone story. Like when you watch a crime episode like CSI or something like that, it's very formulaic.
Right. Well, and that's where Gotham works, but I think it's inherent in the premise where Gotham is about the city and all these characters in the city. It's not specific just to one character.
And right, you don't know. You see, like, the relationship between Alfred and Bruce building, and then you see this growth of the Penguin growing, right, and manipulating people and changing things, and you never know what's going to happen. It's not like
you see in Gordon how his life is changing.
Right. You don't see like Gordon investigate the same crime scene over again, and then solve a murder, and then it's over, and then you're on to the next one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's
you never
ongoing
know what
threads.
You never. I love. I'm a huge fan of ongoing threads, and that's why I was talking about the comics that I did. Is they felt like they're ongoing threads that are like the Swamp Thing and the Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. They have these like threads that are highly addictive and not formulaic. And there are I'm trying to think of a formulaic series that I like, that I have a fond memory of, besides like the cartoons like Scooby-Doo. But I tend to like these story like Spartacus and Sopranos. Do you see the formula I like? The ones that build?
Yeah, the ongoing.
Like, it's an ongoing story. The characters die, they live, and it's not – you can't describe the plot the same from week to week. I think that's what I like.
So you like that over the Gilligan's Island?
Yeah, Gilligan's
Island. They're going to get rescued, but then at the end they don't get rescued.
Yeah.
episode.
Although the comedies, like Seinfeld, is very formulaic, but I like a show about nothing because I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna get. Do you know what I mean? It's a show that you can't predict.
It can go anywhere, yeah.
It could go anywhere. Yeah, it's. We'll see where Flash turns up. Constantine, I'm behind on, but I've liked episode slightly better and better. And American Horror Story, The Freak Show, is really good. I like that one. That one's maintaining its interest for me.
Yeah, I gotta start watching the previous seasons.
I know the previous season just made Netflix, but you don't have that yet.
I think it's on Amazon, maybe.
But it is probably on your library, I would think.
Yeah, they have it there. I'm sure they have the DVDs. I have to get I gotta get Orange is the New Black season 2.
Yeah.
From the library. That'll be my next one.
So any other TV shows that you're
still like an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I know you don't like it, but
I might revisit it now that it's on streaming, but I've sampled it so many times I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah.
I'm glad other people are liking it. That's cool.
And then what else? Yeah, nothing, just the usual couple sitcoms.
I think Constantine's going to be canceled, which may open up a spot.
Yeah, I know that's something
else.
Having trouble finding an audience. Well, if they haven't found it by now, I don't think they're going to get it.
Yeah. Unless they move it another night and somehow catches, or move it to another network. Maybe like Sci-Fi or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll catch on there. So, any other TV?
Nope, not that I can think of offhand.
How was your turkey? Thanksgiving.
Delicious. Delicious. Tofurkey.
Tofurkey.
Yeah, tofurkey. For our lunch, so we do two. We do Melanie's side at lunch and then my family at dinner.
And you have tofurkey in both?
No, at lunch we had some kind of, it was like a celebration roast.
What does that mean?
It was a roast full of celebration. It was like a wheat, I think it was like a wheat gluten-based roast.
So are both your families vegetarians?
No, there are vegetarians on both sides, though.
Besides yourselves?
Yeah. Yeah, like Melanie's sister.
What about the normal people?
What about them?
Do they get a real meal, too?
Yeah, they get a real turkey.
Okay, they get real stuff. They don't get all this chemically induced.
right, processed food.
This processed food that some scientist is behind to try to make.
They created in the lab.
Try to make this bean taste like meat.
Yeah, they didn't grow beans in the lab in the form of turkeys.
I'm going to turn tofu into turkey.
They have one kind of meat substitute that's like a fungus.
Which you get out of people's toe jam?
Hey, I'm not sure what the source of the fungus is. They grow in a lab. I don't eat that stuff. I'm afraid of it. I won't even go there. The fungus.
This is the part of the show that Daryl loves so much. This is why he listens to it.
Tofungus, I think it's called.
To hear about your meals.
My delicious meals.
Yeah.
And of course, there are lots of sides, so I had lots of casseroles of things, green beans and mashed potatoes.
I had
Brussels sprouts. That's good.
A lot of chili, and it was so good. The thing I love is New Mexican mashed potatoes with red chili. With the
red chili all over it. Yeah.
Yeah, with pork pieces in it. Pork meat. Oh God, it's good.
What's the pork meat in? The chili or the?
It's in the red potatoes. Chili. Yeah, it's in the. No, it's not in the potatoes.
Porky potatoes.
But it's in the red chili. It's so good. And then we had the turkey, the usual stuff. Had this weird pumpkin dessert, which I liked, but I don't even know what it was. It was pumpkin pie. No, I've had the pumpkin pie. You have that every year, but we had this. It was like this bread pudding, except it was like pumpkin bread pudding.
I love bread pudding.
It was unusual. I never had it before.
That sounds good. I love the bread pudding.
Well, I love bread pudding, and then they added pumpkin to it, and it was really flavorful. It was really good. Let's see. Oh, and I had the best Bob's Burgers that I've had in years. Whoever was the cook that made my Ranchero burger, he just smothered the fuck out of that with chili. It was nice. It was hot. It was hot, but not too hot, like where it's unbearable. Mm-hmm. But it burned. It was awesome. And then my footlong chili cheese dog with onions. Oh man, that's like paradise. And then I had my Lotta burgers with green chili and cheese. Oh, so good. I just love eating when I'm down there.
Because they put chili on everything.
Yeah, it's...
Sounds good.
I like how you can get it on everything. We ate breakfast. Do you remember that restaurant we ate breakfast at, Barb? Oh, it's called Lolly's. It's like a Mexican restaurant. It's a weird name for a Mexican restaurant. But I had a really good burrito there with a lot of chili on it. And I made it Christmas. Back over there, you can order Christmas. And what it is half red, half green.
Nice.
So you get the best of both worlds. Trying to think of any other restaurants we ate at, but coming up blank. I know we went to a steakhouse one night, and I had ribs there, and that was good. We had a cheesecake that was delicious. It was a Bananas Foster cheesecake.
Hmm.
Mmm.
Cheesecake is usually good.
Yeah, there was one cheesecake we got from one of the places here, I think, and it was delicious. I don't remember what kind of cheesecake it was, but the texture of the cheesecake was just like perfect for me. It's like, damn, it's delicious. But that's all the food I think I have eaten. I'm getting hungry, really, really hungry right now. I know we're going to get Italian today because we have a Groupon. And I think I'm going to get the three plate, which comes with a serving of lasagna, a serving of spaghetti, and a serving of chicken parmesan or something like that.
Well, that's good. You'll have a lot that you'll be able to take home.
Yeah. Well, last time I brought home a little piece of lasagna, but other than that, I ate through it. All right. Are we wrapping up?
I think so.
All right. You've listened to Geek Brunch episode, I think I said it earlier.
216, I think you said?
Yeah, 216. And
I am Bill.
And I'm Mike. And we just finished a long discussion about Intersect. I think we spent about an hour on Intersect.
Amazing.
Yeah. And you can reach us at the Facebooks at Geek Brunch Podcast, or you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. Bill is at DBM00. Micah, you could see what he's doing and see if he even will write you back at do underscore what. You could say, what's up, buddy? I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. And you can listen to the other podcast, Geek Brunch Retrocast, which is usually on alternating weeks, on that site as well. And Micah, or Bill at comicbooknoise.com is our emails. And thank you, Mr. Vandalay, for the email for Bill Bomer about his cassette tapes.
Yes, thank you for your support.
I'm sure you're going to be more than happy with his app when that app is released. Because that'll be like on demand. When they get the on demand bill feature, I'm sure you'll even, if you, as an extra, if you buy the app, you can get elevator support.
Oh, that's a separate app.
Oh, you're gonna charge for that
I,
one too?
Yeah, I'll charge
you,
that.
You can't.
You can't give that away. Can't give that away.
All right.
For,
well.
First, the first rescue is free. After that, $99 a day.
Yeah, it's an expensive app, but it's well worth it. Especially when you're in an elevator with like 500 people and you're not sure it's going to make it to the next floor.
Sorry, you can't put a price on that. That's you can't put a price on your own life and the life
but
of others.
But if you buy the app in advance and not be in the situation where you have to download the then it's cheaper. Because you're paying a monthly
if you,
fee.
If you pay the monthly fee, then it's gonna overall it's gonna be cheaper than.
But if you have to have that one time saving app,
forget it.
Yeah, that's like $150,000 you're charging. That's pretty high, but
it's worth it though.
I guess
you can't
if
put
you're...
a price on your life.
You can't. That's right.
What's $150,000 compared to your life?
If you live, then $150,000 is nothing.
Nothing. It's nothing. You got a payment plan.
Part, yeah. If you pay $1,000 a month, you'll be set. It's just like a house cost of a house.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
Low interest rates, 8.5%.
And you might in yearly if you he does throw in a turkey every year.
Yep. Around Thanksgiving, you'll get that turkey mail. Turkey gram. Pop that in the oven for your loved ones.
So you do get something, even if you're broke because you have to save your life.
You know, if that's the only thing you can afford to eat.
You could get a free tofurkey. All right, Bill. Well, you have a good week, buddy.
All right, you too.
All right, see you. Bye.
Take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Do we simply turn our heads? Well, the world turns, and a hungry little boy with a runny nose plays in the street as the cold wind blows in the ghetto. And his hunger burns. So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight in the ghetto. Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far, and his mama cries. As a crowd gathers round, an angry young man face down in the street with a gun in his hand in the ghetto.